my cold, cold heart actually beats my friends. And who wants chocolate? Who wants flowers on Valentine's Day? Who wants to even celebrate Valentine's Day? Well, if you have to celebrate Valentine's Day and you have no idea what to get your significant other, may I suggest a tweet heart? In this episode, I'm going to show you how to build a pixel heart, shows that you actually have a little bit of love, and it's going to be, here's how you laser cut it, here's the neopixels, and here's different ways that you can actually probably send messages to your loved one. Hi, I'm Stacey Mulcahy. I'm a technical evangelist out in New York City. It is cold outside and I have my toque on. It's a toque for all the Canadians out there and any other thing you want to call it, like a winter hat for everyone else. So today I'm going to be talking about a little project that I built and I'm pretty stoked about it. It got picked up by Hackaday and it got picked up by Adafruit. And it is basically, how do I describe it? I call it Tweet Heart. So it is a light enclosure kind of box that I built laser cut and then used NeoPixels, which are strips of LEDs that you can individually address. You can get from Adafruit along with the Spark Core, and it monitors the Twitter streaming API to look for certain events such as a retweet, maybe an unfollow, maybe a follow, and it'll kind of perform certain animations. And so I'm going to be walking through this project today, showing you how I built it, and then kind of just breaking down some of the things you need to consider, especially if you're going to be working with something like NeoPixels. So what does TweetHeart look like? Let's see if I can kind of show it to the camera that's animating up. And I'm not sure if you're going to get all the colors. Maybe if I move it back. Yeah, you're not going to get all the colors captured necessarily, but I have some video of it. And basically what this is it is a laser cut enclosure made of plywood that I stained. And then on the inside, I took some frosted acrylic and I cut out the, enclosure and I put in this acrylic and I kind of hot glued it in. And so what this is it's kind of works as a light that you can, you know, put up on a mantelpiece or whatever. And it runs off of a Spark Core with its own little portable battery. And the Spark Core, because again, I've gone through the Spark Core, it's one of my favorite devices out there, it connects to the Wi-Fi, and it's just all it's doing is it's a simple little node app that's just like looking for the streaming API out of Twitter and kind of figuring out what the animations are. So I have a couple of different animations, and again, like you're not gonna get the color kind of captured, with my webcam, the beauty of webcams, right? But you will see, in a couple of videos that we'll add and we'll kind of show that it goes through these animation sequences, based on certain events from the Twitter streaming API. So, for example, if someone favorites something, which is kind of like the heart icon on Twitter, I have a little kind of animation that goes through gradients of, red to purple, and it kind of does a little heartbeat animation. And so, if I'm just kind of sitting in my living room and I have the light up, and especially at night where it's, very, very bright and beautiful, suddenly I'll just see this little animation, and it's kind of like this analog reminder of something that's happening digitally that, it's kind of like a feel-good kind of thing. And so that's, what I aimed with this project. And there was a couple of learning things, along with this project, and I'll actually take the front off just to show you. And again, we'll see, how much fidelity we can get in terms of the webcam, but we'll include some other video. You can see that all of those lights, for example, what I did is I took a strip of NeoPixels, and that's a little bit better, and you'll see that all I did was I cut them out in the shape of kind of like this heart that I laser cut, and I wired them all together. And the beauty about NeoPixels is that they're really, really easy to work with. And so you can buy a strip for, 60, 120 NeoPixels, more if you need. And you can start to address them individually. And so I can start to do things like, splitting my heart in half if I wanted to, or, you could create like a whole screen where it's more of a grid and you might, kind of transpose pixel art on it or that kind of an idea. And so working with this, it was just a matter of cutting out these items and then hot gluing them down. and then wiring them from next to next. And, you know, in the video that we'll I'll show you shortly, I'll show you just exactly what you got to watch when you're working with NeoPixels and how you kind of daisy chain them, for lack of a better word, to work together. So, and again, if you just see the bottom of my enclosure, it's nothing fancy here. I got my little spark cord in this corner, and then I've just got a portable battery pack. And that way you don't have to worry about plugging it in or any of those kind of things. So one consideration with NeoPixels, if you start working with them, is that you need to worry about power. You need to worry about how much power your microcontroller is going to take and needs, and how much it needs to actually power the NeoPixels. On the Adafruit site, they have a really, really great guide about powering your NeoPixels, and there's kind of a mathematical calculation that you can use to figure out how much power you need and when you need an additional source. Now, if you go out and you kind of buy a strip of NeoPixels, 60, even up to 120, a typical microcontroller can, you know, pretty well handle that, and you can just plug them right in and you're kind of good to go. But if you are going to be, you know, buying a couple strips and doing something along those lines, you might need to consider, and generally it's just good practice to consider, you know, a secondary power source so that your microcontroller is actually powered off one thing, for in this case, you know, the battery pack, and the NeoPixels are maybe, you know, off something else, whether it's another battery pack or whether it's like a 5-volt, you know, plug into the wall or anything along those sorts. And so there are a couple considerations that you do need to think about when working with them, especially in, just in terms of powering. The NeoPixels, the kind of way they work is just if you look at them in terms of each one, you can individually address each one because they kind of go in sequence. And as they go in sequence, like this one goes to this one, which goes to this one, for example, and it's kind of the way it's animating through, as you see right now, you'll see that you can individually address them. So, you know, I could be going every second one could have, you know, turned off or turned on or a different color. You can also, the beauty of working with the NeoPixels is that there is a library that's available to you. And so it doesn't matter if you use a spark core, if you use, you know, an Arduino of some sort, there is a library that Adafruit has put out, and it's to work with the NeoPixels, and it makes it so easy. And so I'll show you a couple examples of that code. And I'll show you also a couple of things you need to consider when you're trying to work with a project where you're doing something along these lines, where you're animating things and things look like they're kind of progressing and step by step, and yet you kind of need to interrupt that process. I need to stop this animation and maybe run a different one, for example. And so there's a couple of little things that you can kind of, you know, you need to work with and consider when you're doing those things. So we're going to take a look at just how I wired these up, just so you have an understanding of how this works for yourself. And then we're going to jump into some code. NeoPixels are pretty much my favorite thing right now. So what are NeoPixels? NeoPixels are individually addressable RGB LEDs created by Adafruit. And they allow you to easily control a strip, for example, or even individual LED lights that you might have wired up. And so you can get them in a variety of ways. NeoPixels sometimes come in a strip like this that you'll see, anywhere from, you know, 60 to 120, etc. Sometimes they'll come individually. You can get them, you know, like I said, in a variety of ways from Adafruit. And they're really easy to work with because they give you a library that will help you control each of these pixels one by one. A couple things to consider when looking at NeoPixels for your project is, especially on the Adafruit site, they do a really good job of outlining how much power you need for this, whatever kind of NeoPixels you're running and the amount of NeoPixels you're running. So LEDs take a lot of power, and you need to be very considerate of that, especially if you're working with a microcontroller, because if you don't have enough power, they might not be bright enough, you might not be able to light all of them, you might not have enough power for other things that are going on. And so when you go to purchase your NeoPixels, they give you a calculation based on how many you have and what kind of power you're going to need. Often people will go make this calculation and have a separate source for their power. So it might be a portable, you know, battery pack, it might be one of those, you know, 5-volt plugins. It depends really on what your power needs are. And so you really need to consider that when you're looking at NeoPixels for your project or LEDs in general. So
This spindle here that I have actually comes with a waterproof casing. And so often I'll buy them with a waterproof casing, which is handy if I want to, you know, have a project that's going to live outside. An example being, you know, Christmas lights or something along those lines. And so you can remove this casing, no problem. And it's just a matter of stripping off this casing, and then you get down to the bare kind of NeoPixels here. NeoPixels, they often will give you, especially on a strip here, they'll give you these connectors already for you. But what you need to make sure, especially if you're going to maybe strip this or you're going to maybe cut them and separate them out and solder some wires together, is that you need to take a really good look at the NeoPixels, and you need to look at, let's see if I can get that in close enough. You need to look at the direction that the arrow is going. And so you'll see this little arrow beside ground. And so each NeoPixel here, individually addressable, you pass it basically RGB. So it's expecting a value for R, G, and B. And then you'll have a ground pad. You'll have this middle pad, which is going to be what you need to use to control them. So that'll be, you know, you might put that in pin 2, for example, in your Spark or whatnot, and then we'll have this other one that's ground. So you need to make sure that if you are going to cut them or separate them, or even if you're going to add power, that you're making sure that if your power source is going to be here on this end, that it's going following this way, and that all of your pixels, when you wire them together, especially if you separate them out, that you're following the direction of that arrow. On Adafruit's site, they also give you kind of best practices. They call it the Uber Guide for NeoPixels. And so they will outline things that you could be doing best practices. One is to have a capacitor so you can kind of, taper off that initial flush of power or energy that sometimes can blow out your first pixel. They'll, you know, help you with powering, helping you decide which ones you need for your project. And so just following that guide is really handy just for some best practices. Now, a strip like this, I think, which is about 60 pixels, I've never really used a capacitor. You know, don't do as I say, I guess is the best way to put it. Usually what I do is I'll test them out and I'll just strip the power and the ground here, and I'll alligator clip them in, and then I'll just connect a wire into the white here. And so if I'm on an Arduino, for example, you know, I'll make sure this is going to 5 volts of power, I'll make sure that this is going to ground, and then I'm going to make sure that this white here is going to the pin that, you know, I'm going to write in my Arduino sketch to make sure I control them. Working with NeoPixels is pretty much a joy because they give you a library. And the library really kind of abstracts a lot of the things that you need to worry about when trying to, you know, individually address them. So using the library, you basically tell it the number of pixels that you have, what type of pixel type, if you have a specific kind of different pixel type that it might be. And then, you know, it gives you a whole bunch of functions like, you know, setting the pixel color of a specific number of pixel. And so you just look at it as a list. And so it's just going to kind of give you like the first, second, third, whatever pixels that you got down the row. And so, you know, working with them is quite easy in that regard. So for my project, I got a strip of these, and this is 60, but I actually bought one of 120. And what I ended up doing is I stripped out all of this casing, and then I cut them so that I could place them in the heart shapes that I needed. And so you need to make sure you cut right on the middle there. And what I would do is I'd cut right down the middle there, and then when I soldered them, I would actually kind of tin the pads here first, and then I would put whatever wires I wanted in and tin them, and that made it a lot easier for me to work with them and kind of solder them together, which was a very, very quick process. I just had to make sure that I was always following that arrow, because the minute you kind of screw that up, you kind of borked your whole project at that point. So if we look under the hood of my project for Tweetheart, what I had done here outside of the enclosure that I did is, if we take it apart, hopefully I can do this without breaking anything, is you will see the pixels here. And what I did is I went through and I cut them based on the size. And maybe I'll go from the bottom here. And you can start to see that I laid them out and then I just did wiring from each set to the next set. And so what I did is I cut them out, I placed them, I glued them. I glued them very, very badly. And I went in and if we look at the pixels and see if we can get a good kind of version there, you'll see that I just went through and I made sure that you know, my power source is starting here, for example, and that my pixels are going there. And then this connector actually comes back to here, right? And so the wires are kind of going underneath. And so, you know, working with some of that stuff was just tedious, right? And so what I would do is I would hot glue just on top of these connections. Once those connections were good, I'd hot glue so that if I moved it around a little bit or that kind of thing, I just kind of sealed it. Right. And so, you know, each time I put a row on, I just, again, count the number of pixels. I would run a sketch in Arduino. I'd make sure it was working. And then I'd keep going up and I'd keep going up and I'd, you know, keep going all the way up until the end. Right. And so in doing that, I can make sure that I'm starting this as being my first pixel, you know, and the top of the heart over here as, is my last. Right. And so all the wiring just goes underneath. And then what I actually did for this is I separated this out and I put it on magnets. And so I can take this off and you'll see, maybe you'll see there's magnets there. And so I just put magnets on the back so that I could just kind of click it in. Now, magnets aren't going to screw up your electronics. A lot of people kind of forget that. And so when they start building enclosures, even like the one that I did with Box Maker here, is that people forget that you can use magnets for a lot of that stuff. And they're really handy, especially if you're building enclosures. So this way, what I can do is I can work on this independently and just lay it in where I want to lay it in with those magnets.
Okay, so we're going to look at a little bit of code. And there's really two pieces to this project in terms of code. So up on my GitHub, I've kind of put everything up there. There might be little pieces that you can take for your own project, but it's, github.com/bitchucode/tweetheart. And this is the repo basically for this project. And there's, like I said, two pieces for it. One is going to be basically the sketch or the .ino file that you are going to flash your Spark Core with. Now, if you wanted to do something similar, but let's say you just didn't want the tweet stuff. You just wanted to kind of have the animations and maybe play a little bit more with animations. You could totally take that item and, you know, kind of remove a little bit of that stuff, remove the Spark related dependencies. You might have to rewrite it a little bit, but you could take pieces of that and it would totally work with an Arduino, no problem. You just wouldn't have any of the Wi-Fi connectivity kind of, you know, Twitter API stuff, you know, coming in. So two parts. So there's the INO file, and if we look under spark.io and Tweetheart, you'll see this, for example, and we'll open it up in the actual spark.io interface. But again, you know, there's pieces of this code that you could kind of grab and fairly easily refactor, because there's very few changes that you need to do between, you know, getting this to work on Arduino versus getting it to work on Spark. So that's one aspect is, one, you've got to actually flash your microcontroller. You know, you got to give it some logic, give it something to do. The second part of this is using node.js, and there's, you know, a library in there that you can use that I've shown before, and you can use the Spark library, and this is a node.js file that, you know, you can run, and you will now see, you know, for example, you pass in everything that you need to do, and now it'll connect to Twitter, and it will start to do all those things. So if we kind of look through this, you know, this Node.js, for example, this little app file, I made a little website, and it's running up in a website in Azure. And the beauty about, you know, using Azure, it's very, very easy to just get this app.js and get it up there and deploy it almost seamlessly from GitHub. And you'll start to see that you can, you know, and I've gone through the process before, but, you know, debug it and all that kind of other good stuff. So, you know, again, if we're looking at this app.js file, you know, that should be running somewhere, whether you're going to run it locally on a different computer or whether you're going to, you know, run it, you know, like I said, deploy it to Azure, whatnot. You'll see that there's a couple things that I'm doing here. And one is I'm going to be using a library for Twitter. I'm using the Twit module. What a great name for a module. You just one dependency and it's a Twit. Awesome. And then you've got, I've also used a Spark module, and I'm using the dot kind of environment, like the idea of dot files, environment files. I tried playing with this library or this module. I thought it was something interesting because I could just have, a .env file kind of local to next to my project, and it could load it in, and I could keep any of those kind of private variables that I might want there. And what do you mean by private variables? Private variables, what would we want there? Well, you know, you're working with the Twitter API. You're going to need things along the lines of your authorization token, your client ID, you know, all that kind of stuff that you need when you're working with an API. So I'd probably put it in a dot file, for example, again, and not include it necessarily in my GitHub. And then, I also might need the login and password or any of those kind of things that I might need. If we go down a little bit through after I've, looked through these items and I've loaded that environment kind of variable file, you log in with the Spark login and you see that I'm actually getting my username and my password, and it's I'm getting it from the process.env. And what that means is that, once I've deployed to Azure, I'm going to go in and I'm going to create some environment variables for that item. And that way I don't have to worry about, anyone knowing what they are or having access to them or them being in my GitHub, for example. So again, you could use .env files or you could use the process.env. And again, I'm going through the same thing for all of my Twitter stuff. So this module for working with the Twitter API is very, very easy. And that's one of the things I really like about Node. I don't know if, it's like any other kind of language. I don't know if any of the libraries are absolutely perfect, and sometimes you really have to, take them for a ride to figure out where some of the issues might be. But the fact that you can say, hey, I have an idea. I think I need to, I need a module that's going to load a .csv file. Someone's kind of written it. And so you can kind of prototype really, really quick. And that's what I enjoy about working with Node. And so, if I'm looking at this, I'm creating a new instance of this Twit module. I'm passing it in all the things it needs, my consumer key secret, my access token, the token secret. And now I'm using the streaming API. And the difference between the streaming API and just average everyday API is when you're, calling to the Twitter API and you're using kind of the normal REST API, you're going to go to an endpoint, you're going to make a call, you're going to get something back. When you're using the streaming API, you open a connection, as you see here, stream.onConnect, and it keeps that connection open, and it streams you data. And it'll stream you data in terms of also events. And so what you can start to see is once you open a stream, you can say, well, on certain events, I want to do certain things. And so, for example, here, what I care about in terms of my Tweetheart is I'm looking for little events from Twitter that might add value to this project or might make it a little interesting to have an animation for. So something like someone favoriting, someone following, someone unfollowing me, for example, I might actually drain out the animation of the heart, which is something that I do. Hey, has someone added me to a list? Has someone retweeted, something, for example? And so you start to see that I'm listening for certain events here. And when that event happens, for example, if someone has favorited one of my tweets, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go to the Spark, go to my Spark board. I'm going to go use that module from Spark. And I'm going to call a function, and you'll see this reflected in our sketch that we load on to our Spark. And, what I'm going to do is I'm calling a function here, and I'm giving it the ID of the Spark because, again, I could have multiple of these lights going with multiple Sparks. So you need to use that Spark ID if you want to target one specifically. At first I thought, why would you do that? But I own about 4 or 5 Sparks now, so it totally makes sense. You target the one you want to talk to, and then I'm calling this function. It's just a string. It's called set mode, and I'm giving it a number. And so all I'm going to do on my sketch that I load onto my Spark is I'm going to have a function that has that set mode, and depending on the value that's passed, I'm going to do a different type of animation. For all intents and purposes, the streaming API for Twitter is very, very straightforward and very easy to use. There's a couple things, though, that you would think would be a little bit easier to figure out or would be kind of exposed for you. And one of them for me was figuring out if someone had retweeted something that I tweeted. And so, I thought for sure there would be like a retweet event. But actually what you want to do is you want to see, like, if there has been a tweet, you want to say, okay, if the status of this tweet, if this property retweeted status is not equal to null, then you know someone has kind of retweeted something that you have, Same thing for something like unfollow. You've got to figure out to make sure that it's not an event that you unfollowed someone, but that someone unfollowed you. So you want to say, if the target of this unfollow, so if the person that has just been set to unfollow is, for example, my, Twitter name, then I want to do this. So there's a couple of little things, but again, not a lot of work. It's just a line of code, depending on what you need to figure out. And this is as simple as it gets for the app.js. What I did here is I basically went to Azure. I created a new website. I deployed from source. I added in some of those process and environment variables, Spark ID, the Twitter information in the Azure portal. And then I was up and running, and I'm kind of good to go. So that's, pretty much as simple as it gets for, creating a basic app.js and connecting to the Twitter API, but also working with the Spark. So what we're going to do now is we're just going to look at the sketch, because there's a couple of things I learned about working with the NeoPixels and about, trying to do the animations that might be useful when you explore NeoPixels or LEDs on your own. So in the Spark, portal in the site, spark.io, you can launch, your environment, and you can figure out what core you're going to target. To use the NeoPixel libraries in Spark, they already have them, and they do have a different name than if you're using them in Arduino. So what you need to do is you need to go in and you need to look at libraries, which you see down here. And when you click libraries, you can start to search for libraries. And so you can start to see what kind of libraries the Spark team has ported for you or has made available for you. And you'd be surprised. There's a bunch of stuff there. Pretty much everything that you would expect to see, especially if you're working with an Arduino Plus. So they've included the NeoPixel library, and you just go to libraries and you basically like say, I want to add it to this project, and it adds it up here and it includes it. So this looks different than if you're working on Arduino. If you're working on Arduino, that would look much different. That library would have a different name. And, that would be something you would need to change, for example, if you wanted to run the sketch on your Arduino, not worry too much about, some of the other things. The next thing that I do here is I just define kind of like some static variables that aren't going to change. And, the more I did different animations, you start to see a couple of these variables come up. So, for example, I have the idea of a gradient size. And so, depending on the animation, I might be looking at the idea of, I want a gradient with 6 values. So I might be going from, one color to the next, that's, 6 different values. I might be looking at the idea of heartbeat count. So, for example, how many times does this beat, or, how many, a counter that I might need. The next thing that you see here is I go through and I define my pixel count. So when you're working with the NeoPixel library, they make it really easy for you. Basically, you include it, and the one thing you need to know for sure is how many pixels you're working with. And so when you start to look at that, I needed to lay all my pixels out and I needed to count them. Because if you don't have the proper number, what will happen is you'll start to see that your animation gets really wonky, and sometimes it might even slow down. And when you think about it, it's kind of like going through pixels that don't exist and technically could be throwing some errors, right? And so you want to make sure that you know the number of pixels. So for my pixel heart, it has 93 pixels. And then the next thing I define is the pin that I'm going to use. And so on the Spark, I'm going to use the D2 pin, which is actually also a pin that you can do pulse width modulation on, which means that you're not sending just one signal. You can send a, you know, like pulses of signals. And so that's what kind of allows you to do things like dim and those kind of things when it comes to LEDs. You have a couple other variables, like what kind of pixel type. And so this is a number that you'll see people use again and again. It's a type of, it's like the kind of the part or the number of the pixel. It's the type of pixel that you're dealing with. And that's important because that NeoPixel library needs to know what kind of pixel type it's dealing with. And so, you know, that's something you need to look up once you get some pixels, whether it be NeoPixels or whether it be a strip of pixels or that kind of thing. And then I have two other kind of variables. I did an outline count and an inner count. And what I was actually trying to do here with this is I was trying to see if I could figure out which pixel numbers would be the ones on the outside to kind of create an outline so that I could have like dark red on the outside, light pink on the inside, which, you know, once diffused, creates a really, really beautiful gradient, like that kind of idea. And so I was trying to figure out like how many, what the count was, what how many numbers were there, for example. And then I have a couple other variables that I declare, and you'll start to see these items. So I have an interval, which is 50, a variable called interval, and it's equal to 50. Think of that as like, 50 milliseconds. And then I have another variable called previous millis, and both of these you'll see in a second why I need to declare them and how I'm actually using them. The next one I have here is I'm declaring an int and it's set mode and you're passing in a string. And this is how you work with the Spark and, you know, kind of call functions on it, is that you declare those function as ints, you name the function, you know, this is kind of giving the interface, so to speak, and you tell it what you're expecting to pass in. And so that way you can register a function that the Spark should be able to call. And then when it is called, it'll evaluate it and try to call it for you. I have a variable that's, again, it's going to hold the current color, and it's going to hold that kind of RGB current color value. And when you're working with NeoPixels, you have to think of, you know, colors in terms of RGB and the values for each of those. So if you're thinking about RGB, it's something that's just really red is going to be, you know, 255. Full on all red, for example, and then 00 in the G being green and you know, B being blue. If something's blue, it's going to be 255 in the blue with 0 in the other, you know, slots. And then, you know, colors in between, that's when you start to mix them. So if something that's pink, you're going to have, you know, maybe 225, and you're going to have a little bit of green, a little bit of blue, for example. So, you know, you got to think of colors in terms of, the values for the red, for the green, and for the blue. And that became really fun because when I started working on this project, I would look up color palettes, and you can always get a color palette in RGB, and I would start, you know, figuring out gradient sequences based on color palettes from something like Cooler, a tool for creating color palettes from Adobe, for example. So I have a couple other variables here that, you know, we can go in and see in action. But for the most part, this is a line that anyone working with NeoPixels is going to care about. Once you've included the library, what you do is you create a variable, and it's of type Adafruit NeoPixel. And so my variable name is strip. And I'm creating an instance of this, and I'm passing in the pixels. So for the most part, you know, you'll see this kind of written out. And all you need to do almost ever is just change this value amount. How many pixels are you dealing with? And again, you could have, you know, if you're dealing with the whole kind of strip, you just got it, you know, delivered to you and you ordered 120, you might put 120 there. If you did something like me where you cut them out and you kind of like, daisy chain them together, you got to figure out how many you have. And so that's, once you have that strip, you start to use this variable to control them. And when we go through the sketch, you'll start to see all the functions that they make available to you that are, that make working with NeoPixels just such a joy to work with. They do all the hard work for you. And all I'm declaring here in the sequence is just kind of like a list sequence of gradients. And so these are going to be used for different animations. So the list sequence, if someone adds me to a list, it might use this kind of variable as its colors to deal with. Favorites has these colors. Follow has these colors, for example. And then, you know, here, when I was playing with the outline of, you know, the heart or the second outlines, meaning, like, could I actually figure out, you know, if it was pixel by pixel, like two kind of pixels in, what are the numbers of those pixels? And so I'm just, you know, storing values here. I don't think I actually use this. I think I played with it more than anything else. So all that really matters there, NeoPixel library, tell it how many pixels you have, right? And then what you need to do is in your setup function, because I'm going to call a function from Node, Node's going to use that Spark module, and it's going to call that set mode function. I need to register it here. And so I go spark.function, and here's, you know, the string representation of it, and here's what it's pointing to that I declared up here. And then I'm going to store what the current color is. So, for example, I'm going to initialize current color to be red. And this is, again, one of those functions that strip gives you, or that NeoPixel library gives you, because strip.color, and you pass in the RGB values, and it will tell you now, you know, return that kind of color to you, whatever it may be. And the things that you care about in terms of working with this is that you need to call strip.begin in your setup or whenever you want to start using it. Most people do it in their setup. And you need to call strip.show, right? And a prime example here is all I'm doing is I'm looping through all the pixel count, the number of pixels I have. So I'm looping through all 93 pixels, and I'm setting the pixel color to be red, for example. And so you see this function, strip.setPixelColor, and that's how you individually set the color of each pixel. So when you start going through the NeoPixel library and you start looking through the examples, they show you so many good examples, and that's totally where you want to start. But you'll notice that a lot of those examples rely on something called delay. And that's how they get the idea of the animation happening. So when you see that sequence in my heart where it's going one by one, one by one, and there's like a delay between one pixel to the next, they're using a function that's actually, you know, built in called delay. And what delay does is it actually holds and stops the process. So it stops anything from executing for the amount of time that you specify, whether it's 50 milliseconds, whether it's 2 seconds, that kind of thing. So for the example, if you have something that's just a display and it's not taking any input, you know, using delay is really, really great. But if you ever need anything in Arduino or any of these microcontrollers that's responsive, you need to know if someone's not just press a button once, but is pressing the button multiple times, for example. And you need to, you know, have that fidelity of, like, are they, you know, hitting it every couple seconds or whatever it may be. Or if you need to, in my case, figure out if something has happened in the Twitter API and call a function on it and change the animation, I need to be able to basically do that, capture that, and interrupt what's going on. If I use delay, I can't. I can't do that reliably, because what's happening is that that process is actually being delayed. So if I go to hit that button, or if that call from the Spark is made while that delay is in progress, it's going to be ignored. Like, nothing's going to happen. And so delay, it's your best friend because it allows you to do things really easy, but it's also your worst enemy. And so I had to figure out, how can I avoid using delay? And there's a bunch of people out there who have different approaches, and they're all kind of the same thing. You know, you need to basically figure out, store a variable that says, when was the last time this was called? Okay, what time is it now? You know, so it's the idea of previous time, elapsed time. If the difference is the amount of the delay that you want, then you can execute what you want to do within there. And so I had to take that approach. And again, this is, you know, familiar to a lot of languages. And so I wrote on my blog, which we'll include a link to, just kind of like how I went about doing that, and you'll see it in this code. So I have a variable here, for example, once I've, you know, set my script to begin, and I've initialized the colors, and I set it to show, my once this is plugged in, it will just initialize to be red, right? And then I have a function here. It's at init set mode, and this is a function that's going to be called from the node app.js file using that Spark module. And all it is basically it's a mode variable that tells me what that number is. What mode am I running in? So if I'm always running in 0 or 1 or whatnot, maybe I'm running kind of, you know, a basic animation sequence. But if that mode gets set to something like 4 because someone has followed me, maybe that should signify a different animation and I got to switch what I'm doing. And so in terms of actually doing that, what I do is I allow the Spark to set this variable, or allow sort of the node, the app.js, to set this variable. And then on the loop, I'm always evaluating this variable, right? So I'm always checking on the loop, because setup gets called once, loop gets called all the time. I'm always going to, you know, evaluate, has the mode changed? And, you know, if the mode is whatever the mode may be, I need to kind of change that color sequence. And so what I do in the loop here, if I'm looking through the loop, is I'm basically saying, this is my way of replacing delay. I'm basically saying, if the time now, which you can do using millis, right? If the difference between, you know, current time and previous time is basically greater or equal to than that interval I'm specifying, you know, maybe it's 50 milliseconds, which is what I initialized it to, then I know I can do this. And I just need to figure out, again, capture that timestamp so I know what that previous time I called this at was, right? And so the one thing about millis to notice is that millis, from an Arduino perspective, it does kind of have a time expiration. And I can't remember what the value is. It's some kind of crazy amount. It's like 49 days or something like that. So if you are working on a project that needs to run forever, will never be rebooted, millis might not be the way to go. If you're working on something like me, it's going to be perfectly fine. I'm going to turn this off and on all the time, so it's not really going to matter. So that's just one of those little gotchas that you got to be a little bit aware of. And so all I do through here is, once I know that I'm within that delay, is that I'm going to, you know, whatever the mode may be, I'm going to switch on the mode value, and whatever that case evaluates to, I'm going to run that sequence. And through the animations, what I do is I just store what variable or what pixel I'm operating on and always increment it until I'm done, for example. And that's how most of the animations work, and you'll kind of see as you go through. But most of them require, because I'm constantly calling it on the loop, and I'm kind of putting in that delay by figuring out how much elapsed time has had, I need to figure out where I'm at. Where am I at in that sequence, right? And so that's where the work, where you see a little bit more work rather than using delay. But, you know, very, very simple. And I took some of the things that they did in the NeoPixel examples, such as color wipe. I added my own, you know, a little bit of my own thing to it. I have, for example, a heart drain. So you see case 5 here. You know, that's if someone unfollows me. My heart just basically drains out. It's so sad. But, you know, or case 7, someone's, you know, maybe followed me or whatnot, and my heart's going to beat a little bit. So you'll see that, you know, that's kind of how those animations happen. Again, pretty much the only thing is, if you had this, you want to do this project at home, and you had an Arduino, you didn't have a Spark, all you need to do really to switch any of these things out is you need to make sure that this library at the top is actually the, you know, Adafruit Pixel library that you install into your Arduino IDE. And, you know, you just need to get rid of any of these kind of, you know, reliance or dependencies on the Spark library. So you don't need to worry about set mode, because, you know, if you're just using something like an Arduino Uno, you're not worrying about the Wi-Fi part, you just want to see it animate, then, you know, you might get rid of that. But, you know, that's kind of how it comes together, you know, in a nutshell. And so, you know, a bunch of things I'd like to kind of extend out, and I'd like to do some more fun animations and things along those lines. But, you know, it's funny, I started going down one route. I started, you know, using examples from the NeoPixel library, and I realized delay was going to be a problem. And then I had to figure out a way to solve that. Not a hard solution by any means, probably not the most elegant solution by any means either, but, you know, it totally works. So I'm pretty happy with how that panned out in terms of, you know, how it's working. And so, you know, you see two aspects to it. You see the hardware written through the Spark, and then you see more of the software written by the node .js. And you know, this is something that you could take the guts of this, and instead of using Twitter, if you're a sports fan, you know, you can go out and you can laser cut an enclosure for, well, my hockey team is the Oilers. I am tried and true, the Oilers. So you could create, like, you know, something along the similar lines with an Oilers logo, and maybe you're going to scrape a page, or maybe you're going to go to an ESPN API or something along the lines, and anytime it scores, anytime your team has scored or something, maybe it's going to light up, you know. So there's lots of options. You know, maybe you implement Twilio and someone can text you something, and when they text you something, it plays a different animation depending on who texts you, for example. It gives you just a sense of where you can start in terms of, you know, the Internet of Things, and things that are a little bit more fun and get you started coding both with the hardware and with the software side. So if you do not know what to make this year for your Valentine, nothing says love more than a brightly lit heart, am I right? And that's all I have for you in this session of the Internet of Things, making the Internet of Things. And I look forward to showing you my next project, which I hope to actually use the Intel Edison.